Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare
Okay. Bhagavata 44. The gift of daughters amongst brahmanas is most approved if it is preceded by a libation of water. But in the case of other castes, it may be performed by the expression of mutual consent. Riti, the marriage rite that is considered the best amongst brahmanas is that in which the giving of the bride is accompanied by libations of water. In other words, the brahmana rite, which is free from the imposition of conditions. Because otherwise, if you've given the daughter also that by the pouring the water, then you know it's just the action has been performed. So there's no conditions, no strings attached. Because Brahmins also aren't very fond of strings in contracts. It means it's very clear, it's very clean. Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they accept these things because of the political or economic thing. With Brahmins, because they're not into politics or economics, they don't appreciate them at all. Right? So that's also another thing. For other varnas, this rite is also recommended. The other forms of approved marriage rites require mutual consent. Right? So both sides of the family should be. It's proper if there's just everybody is very happy about it. Right? It means the libation of water means there's a commitment to it, but on the other families, at least if there's mutual consent, then it works. You know, even if they're not overly excited about it. You know, but it works. Regarding giving of the bride, Yajnavalkya states, a father, grandfather, a brother, or one in the same family can give away a bride. The death of the preceding person, the succeeding one in order can do the same, provided that he is in a natural temper. Natural temper. In other words, he doesn't suffer from insanity, or natural temper means he's in the proper attitude. It's not that he hates the whole thing and like that. The qualities of the rites. Listen now to me, ye brahmanas, while I fully declare what quality has been ascribed by Manu to each of these marriage rites. The son of a wife wedded according to the brahmana rite, if he performs meritorious acts, liberates from sin 10 ancestors, 10 descendants, and himself is the 21st. Right? So, son born his parents are married according to the Brahma rite, right? So they're acting in their position. Then he's born according to that, and he himself also performs proper activity. Then he will actually liberate 10 ancestors, right? From sin, not out of the universe. Right? So that's, you know, not bad. The son born of a wife wedded according to the Daiva rite likewise saves 7 ancestors and 7 descendants. Right? So that means then 15. The son of a wife married by the Arsha rite, 3 in the ascending and descending lines. So 7. The son of a wife married by the rite of Ka, Prajapati, 6 in either line. Right? So the Arsha rite differs from the other 3 mentioned here in that the boys' families approach the girls for arranging the marriage. So it's not considered as good as if the girl side of the has arranged the marriage. Right? So therefore you get 10, 7, 6, and then that's 3. From the four marriages enumerated successively, which begin with the Brahma rite, spring sons radiant with knowledge of the Veda and honored by the Shishtas, the good men. Endowed with the qualities of beauty and goodness, possessing wealth and fame, obtaining as many enjoyments as they desire, and being most righteous, they will live 100 years. But from the remaining four blamable marriages spring sons who are harsh and speakers of untruth. Untruth means not necessarily lying, but it means it's not connected to the Veda, or it's not connected to, you know, God consciousness or something uplifting. Who lack faith in the Veda and the sacred law. So, in other words, the other one sounds pretty far out, but this one sounds pretty down home, right? You know, so, in other words, first generation understands this one very well. This, everybody they know, this is basically what you get. In blameless marriages, blameless children are born to men. In blamable marriages, blamable offspring. One should therefore avoid the blamable forms of marriage.
An example of Duryodhana.
Duryodhana.
Yeah. What was wrong with their marriage?
Was Dhritarashtra supposed to be king? Why? He was the first, but he's blind. So how would he know if he's running a kingdom? They could have him in a closet somewhere and be saying, "My lord." You know what I'm saying? So is according to the Vedic rule, is a blind person supposed to be king? No. But he was very attached to being king. So is that righteous? So then, if that fault goes to the son, was Duryodhana supposed to be king? No. Yudhishthira was the eldest. But he was attached to the idea. So it's not there was a problem in the marriage, there's a problem in the consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah, you can always see. It means Diti, she was worried about, you know, position, you know, fame, facility, and the husband was interested in sense gratification. So you got Hiranya Kashipu, right? Hiranya from the mother's side, Kashipu from the father's side. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? It means we like to move on this lightly, unless you want it to go deeper, because the thing is when it goes deeper, then anyone becomes disturbed. Then,
if we take the average people in Sati, you know, they bring yoga, not Kali Yuga, so they're more or less blameless.
Yeah, they were Paramahamsas, so they were not doing bad. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's just generally, you see, because others it's working all right. The only problem is, you know, Hiranyakashipu, basically. You know, like that. So it's what the consciousness is. The consciousness is there. Means you have, the marriage creates the situation of the environment, but then within the environment, what you do with it, that's important. Does that make sense? So you have both those things. So you'd have to look if it's just one or the other. Now, you have to remember in these blamable marriages, if those are performed by those who it is their right, is their right, you know, R-I-T-E is R-I-G-H-T, right? Three rights, right? It's got to be right. You know, then it's not a problem. If Rakshasas get married according to Rakshasa right, you know, they'll get a very nice, fine, upstanding Rakshasa, right? You know, they won't get something else, you know. You know, what says political cartoon? There was these two parents, right? You know, hippies, you know, long hair and that. They had a big picture on the wall of, you know, one of these long-haired Indian gurus, and the incense is burning, and they got all their beads and everything like that. And both of them are there. And then their kid walks in the door, you know, very nice, shiny lace-up shoes, his little shorts and his little suit on and, you know, everything like that, and his little bow tie. And the parents look at each other and go, "Where did we go wrong?" Yeah. So, in other words, the Rakshasas don't have to worry about that. You know, the Asuras, they get married according to their right. You know, they end up with a nice Asura. You know, they're happy. But, you know, humans aren't supposed to use these blameable marriages. Therefore, Kshatriyas, of using the Rakshasa or Gandharva marriage rites, will then afterwards also perform the appropriate blameless marriage rites. So, generally, you see, is like after Arjuna had kidnapped Subhadra, you know, and they were finished with, you know, deciding, you know, how they were going to go out and kill him and destroy the world. When they had accepted the principle, then the suggestion was go and invite them back so they can have now a proper marriage. Right, so it's not Gandharva rites not considered a finish. You know, then they'll have the proper. Just like how you say in the Swayamvar, then the element giving the garland and that's the Gandharva aspect. But then you have the rest of the marriage. You know what I'm saying? So, but the Gandharvas, they just exchange garlands and Haribol. You know, that's good enough. I think Kerala, they use the same thing. They just exchange rings. They go sit under a people tree, exchange rings. All the family's there. They just sit there, exchange rings. How are you all? They're married to go off and plan for lunch, you know. So, like that, then this thing. Okay. Grihastha Brahmachari. Let the husband approach his wife in due season, being constantly satisfied with her alone. He, being intent on pleasing her, may approach her with a desire for conjugal union on any day excepting the parvanas. Vritti, for conception of the child, the appropriate season is during the time of fertility. In this verse, it is stated the husband is to be constantly satisfied with the wife alone. That is, he should not approach others. Additionally, the husband should also be intent on pleasing his wife. This indicates he will act in consultation with her. In other words, he's acting in a way that she becomes happy. Right, not just doing whatever he likes to do, but it's in consultation, right? Because otherwise, if the moods aren't matched, if they're not in the proper attitude, then the child will also have that mixed attitude, right? Because you're combining two things. Like if I put perhaps water in the jug, and I put some lemon in, and I put some sugar in, right? And I mix it all up. It doesn't look like lemon or sugar, but what will it taste like? Lemon and sugar. So whatever you put in there is what you'll get. Does that make sense? It's science, right? You'll think, oh no, but that's it's just the way it is. You know, if one is envious and the other one is, you know, angry, then you get this envious, angry kid. You know, it's just like that. That's the way it works.
Maharaj, is it a particular consciousness in time of conception or just general?
It's just like. What is the? It's like this. The consciousness. I mean, what decides going back to Godhead?
The moment of death.
Death, right? But what influences the moment of death?
What happened before?
Yeah, what happened before? So in other words, if the house is peaceful, then conception. I knew it was something to see because he had so many others, you know, like that. So conception. Then that means that's going to be. Based on what is the general mood before. Does that make sense? So if there's a general mood of cooperation, then that will also then give more, how you say, there'll be more focus at the time of conception. Does that make sense? But otherwise, the things are all over the place. So in other words, it never really works to have children to try to hold the marriage together. Because there's insecurity, that's why there's the children. There's, you know, not so much interest, but, you know, this is a little more interesting than nothing. And so you put that together, and then what are you going to have? An insecure person who is interested in sex. You know what I'm saying? As we go through these, does it sound familiar? That's the problem, you know. So we don't want to get anybody worried, but it's science. You know, if I put eggplant and tomatoes together in a pot, when it finishes cooking, what do I have? Cauliflower and potatoes, right? No, it'll be eggplant and tomatoes. Does that make sense? So that's all that is being said is that if you have equal-natured parents, then you're going to have a child that has that same nature. And if their consciousness is proper, then you'll have that works very nicely, right? So that's why then these little things are there. They mean a lot. So that's why he says, if he's satisfied with her alone, he'll give all his attention into interacting with his wife, right? And he's trying to please her, means then taking care of that, then that response, and then it'll naturally, the interaction will be very good. Right? This makes sense. The parvanas, so these are the times to avoid, are the new moon, the full moon, and the two ashtamis. Right? So those are just the Vedic, you just don't use those days. They're just not used. Right? You know, it means what Manu is giving here is something where you don't have to worry about approaching an astrologer to get that exact, how you say, 30-second, perfect, little window like that. You don't have to do that, So this is that anybody can figure it out. Right? Because what you're doing is a combination of the titis, which means no full moon, no dark moon, and no ashtamis. Right? So those 4 days are avoided. Right? And then you're going by the number of the day. It means in the cycle. Does that make sense? Yeah. 16 days and nights in each month, including 4 days which differ from the rest, are censured by the virtuous, are called the natural season of women. Right? So 16 days is the season of women. The first four, says, which are different from the rest and are censured. Right? That means when she's contaminated. Then those aren't used, right? So that means out of that 16, 12 days are approved, right? The first 4 days aren't. One is the first three, there's contamination. The fourth day takes a bath, but that day she's very saintly mood, like that. So it's less, so it starts from the fifth day, right? I think it's even said if someone kills a woman on that fourth day, it's equal to killing a Brahmin. Because their attitude is so much better. Like that. So the first 4 days are avoided, and then from the 5th to the 16th, that's the natural season. Okay. In the 4th chapter, the following verses are also given. Okay. Let him, though mad with desire, not approach his wife when her corpse has appeared, nor let him sleep with her in the same bed. For the wisdom, energy, strength, sight, and vitality of a man who approaches a woman covered with menstrual excretions utterly perish. If he avoids her while she is in that condition, his wisdom, energy, strength, sight, and vitality will increase. Like that. Okay. But amongst these, the first four, the 11th and the 13th are declared to be forbidden. But amongst these... Okay, so here 11th and 13th aren't used. The remaining nights are recommended. Okay, counting from the first day of the cycle, the first four, the 11th, and the 13th are forbidden for conception. The other 10 days out of 16 are suitable. Right? So then you just look. Those days that are left, if they don't fall on an ashtami, or a purnima, or amavasya, then you choose one, whichever you like. Like that. That's considered the way to go. Now he'll continue with this. Okay. Okay. In addition, the fourth chapter stated, twice where a man is a snataka, a Brahmin shall remain chaste on the new moon day, on the 8th lunar day of each, and the full moon day. So that means the same, parvanas. And on the 14th lunar day. This is only for Brahmins. Like that. Others can use it. 14th, because that's a day of destruction. So Kshatriyas use that in this. I think what's his name? Parasuram was conceived on Brahmin family, but on the 14th. So you end up with overly enthusiastic kind of attitude. So only Brahmins avoid the 14th. Okay. And then for us, Ekadasi festival days we generally avoid. It's just the natural. Okay, on the even nights, sons are conceived. This is then how you choose. On the even nights, it's sons. On the odd nights, uneven are here. Uneven ones, rather than odd ones, okay? Uneven ones, then daughters. Hence, a man who desires to have sons should approach his wife and do in due season on the even nights. Right? Does that make sense? So that would mean on the 6th, 8th, 10th, 12th, 14th, 16th. Right, because so when we said 14th, that was titi, not day. Some people get it mixed up. It means day. In other words, all the nights for a son are approved. But of the girls, the 5th, the 7th, the 9th, but the 11th and 13th aren't. The 15th is also okay. Does that make sense? Because each one of those gives a different kind of mentality and everything like that. So that's also possible. Okay. Now, so that's the general rule. Right? But it points out, a male child is produced by a greater quantity of male seed, a female child by the prevalence of the female. If both are equal, or hermaphrodite, or a boy and girl. If both are weak or deficient in quantity, a failure of conception results. Right? Yes, yeah, so in other words, whichever is greater, that's generally the nature of the child. Right? And if it's exactly equal, you'll either get twins where you get a boy and a girl, or you get one that's both a boy and a girl. But generally you don't hear about that much. So I don't know if it's just one of those things that it happens quite often but nobody hears about it, or it just doesn't happen very often.
Infrequent.
Huh?
Infrequent.
Infrequent.
It does happen.
It does happen.
You see girls and they have hair here and different things.
That's probably just from the Italian background.
Yeah, I would say it's just depending on where they're from. Okay. So he who avoids women on the 6 forbidden nights, so this section is called Grihastha Brahmachari. So in other words, it's explaining what is appropriate. Right? He who avoids women on the 6 forbidden nights and on 8 others is equal in chastity to a student in whichever order he may live. In other words, if someone follows these rules, they're as good as a brahmachari. You know, they're grihastha brahmachari, but they're a brahmachari. Okay, the 6 forbidden nights have been described above, namely the first 4, the 11th and 13th, coming from the first day of the cycle. The 8 others include the 4 forbidden lunar nights, the new moon, full moon, ashtamis, and chaturdhasis, plus 4 other nights according to preference. So in other words, once you cut it down, then you can choose within that what will be appropriate for you. So does that make sense? So then one doesn't have to worry about, in this anybody can figure this out. You don't have to have an astrologer. Right? So you don't have to worry about what day of the week it is, or what time in the evening, or what muhurta, that you don't have to worry about. This works. Then if you want to add those other things to it, fine. Okay. Yeah. So that means then someone who follows that, then they're a brahmachari. Okay. Honor of women. No father who knows the law must take even the smallest gratuity for his daughter. For a man who, through avarice, takes a gratuity, is a seller of his offspring. This is again referring to the Asura rite, when the father of the bride accepts payment in exchange for his daughter. But those male relations, so this is how it means honor of women, so these are elements of their particular rites. But those male relations who in their folly live on the separate property of women, in other words, they take it appropriate. The beasts of burden, carriages, and clothes of women commit sin and will sink into hell, right? Because a woman has her property, so men can't use that property. It's not their right. Just because it's their wife doesn't mean they have a right in that property. That particular aspect is theirs. Now, if the wife uses it, you know, in her, interaction and that with the husband, she uses it, that's fine. But he cannot use it, or he can't oblige her to use it. You know, and then, you know, like before, it's like you give it a different name and then you're not selling. You sell the daughter, but you give it a different name, and then it's okay. So it's not like here you expect the wife to use that and then say, no, well, I didn't, it's her money. You know, that doesn't work, because we have to remember, as we'll go on, the sun, the moon, the fire, air, water, the earth, you know, they all observe everything, and they're not stupid, right? Like that. So, yeah. And then when, you know, the person gets to, how you say, Yamaraj's court, Chitragupta has it all written down. Like that. And so then when you come in, they pull out the book and they tell you what, you know, like that. So there's no getting out of it like that. Does that make sense? You can't be more clever than... Regarding the separate property of women, further details are given in chapter 9, right? Because there it's inheritance, so it also describes the that which was given before the nuptial fire. In other words, anything that she was given to her as gifts before she got married. That was given on the bridal procession. So all that nice clothes, the ornaments, you know, everything that's given there at that time. What was given in token of love, what was received from her brother, mother, or father, that is called the sixfold property of a woman. So whatever has been given on those, that's hers. It's no one else's. Yes?
Does that mean through the whole marriage? Or just
no, he was saying that means that anything that was given before the marriage means that, you know, and that was given during the marriage. Right, but then what was after that? Then it would be whatever's given a token of love, which received from brother, mother, or father. That is called like that. So in other words, anything that the husband would give the mother, father, brother, you know, or any person who has affection, like that. Does that make sense?
So if during the marriage, say the father gives a gift,
yeah, that's
his daughter. That's
hers. Yeah, it's her. No. No, unless he stipulates it like that. But, you know, then that's something for the house. But what he gives to her, that's hers. Like, you know, nowadays they don't make much distinction. Because afterwards it doesn't matter, because whatever's half of his, she's going to take anyway. So, you know, it doesn't really matter. You put your red sticker on everything, and she puts a blue sticker on everything. You like that kind of thing. Some call the cow and bull given at the Arsha wedding a gratuity, but that is wrong, since the acceptance of a fee, be it small or great, is a sale of a daughter, right? So the question might come up, well, in the Arsha rite, the boy's family, out of respect to is giving a bull and a cow, like that. So then one may say, well, that's also like the Asura rite. But Manu says, but when the relatives do not appropriate for their use the gratuity given, it is not a sale. In that case, the gift is only a token of respect and of kindness towards the maidens. Right? In other words, that's given and it's not for them. It goes with the girl. Right? In other words, he's coming and formally giving a gift to the family that's for the girl. Like, he's not just going and giving it to the girl, because marriage means you're combining two families, so then therefore it will be in connection with the family. Riti, such gifts or presentations are acceptable only when they are received by the relatives on behalf of the bride and passed over to her. As stated, this type of gift is merely a token of respect and kindness towards the maidens. Right? But it'll be made in such a way that it's, you know, honorable to the family. That's what I said before. Those male relations who in their folly live on the separate property of women. In other words, the beasts of burden. So that's what she may have from that. You know. So she could have her own, whatever. In other words, whatever she's been given, right? She's got, you know, she's got a cow, she's got a car, right? You know, like that. The beast of burden happens to be in, you know, a car or something like that. Or maybe the beast of burden is the four-wheel drive muscle truck, right? You know, like that. And then she has the carriage, and she has her Ferrari, like that. You know, so.
What's wrong with the boy's family approaching the girls?
Boy's family approaching the girl. Oh, you weren't here this morning. We started. So, is that means the if the girl's family approaches the boy, means the girl wants to marry that boy. Right? If the boy's family approaches the girl, that means the boy wants to marry the girl. Right?
Yeah.
So the point is if the boy is supposed to set the standards of, you know, of how you say, you know, family life that they are uplifting. If he's attached to her, he might not be so strong on that because of his over attachment to her. But if she's attached to him, then she'll follow whatever is the environment he creates. You know what I'm saying? We're not saying that within that environment that there's not the consideration of how you deal and everything like that. So the point is the possession will be there. But here is that the element is that if he's after her, she knows she can push it beyond the standard limit. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the whole point. Is the woman will always push it right to the edge. You know, she'll definitely not cross it, but she'll push it right up to the edge. So the point is the boy has approached her. Where's the edge? You know what I'm saying? So it's just as far as she can push it. So she'll do that. Well, if she wants to marry the boy, then whatever's the nature of the boy, it's more clear where the edge is, and she'll only come up to there and stop, because she wouldn't want to push it beyond, because he might get upset and not be involved. You understand? Does that make sense? So it makes for a much stronger marriage. It doesn't mean that you can't start there and it'll develop nicely. But the point is that the foundation is stronger. Does that make sense? Like that. But the point is if they deal with it properly, it will work. Does that make sense? I mean, like these other ages that the Kshatriyas, they use the Gandharva rite, but they deal properly, it works. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, it's like Draupadi's from a Swayambar, you know, but Subhadra's from a Rakshasa, right? You know, so but it works because they know what their duties are and everything like this. So this is just talking about the rite itself, what influence it has. But there's so many other aspects involved. Is that something? Yes.
Again, in Rakshasa rite, it is given that the girl is like not willing. She is crying and weeping.
Crying and weeping because, you know, you want to be able to say goodbye nicely to your parents and everything and not have them have their heads or arms lopped off on the process. You know what I'm saying? Right? It's just like Rukmini. She wanted to be kidnapped by Krishna. Right, but that means that then they just go from there, and then how does she say goodbye to everybody and all that? You know, so therefore, generally, then there's a thing where then they catch them and then bring them back and then have the, you know, the regular rites and all that, and that goes. But the point is as Kshatriyas, they don't accept charity, so therefore, it's not an uncommon thing that they'll kidnap the girl first. Because he's shown his prowess. Right? Then after that you can have the regular marriage. Because then he's not accepting charity. It's just, it's a right. Right? But Brahmins, they accept charity, therefore it's considered, that's the proper. Does that make sense?
So the four which are recommended, we see that out of that four, the three are like giving charity of the girl.
No, all four are giving charity.
Without being asked, in one, in the Arsha, there is like being asked like by the...
No, but the father is giving. But there they're approaching the family, so that's where its strength is. But in the Prajapatiya, the girl's making the arrangement. But then the family approves it. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the first two, the father's making the arrangement. Either on his own looking, or he just notices a good opportunity that he hasn't arranged for, but found an opportunity. The other two means that the boy's making the arrangement, or the girl's making the arrangement, the parents aren't making the arrangement. Does that make sense? But both of them, they're approved by the father, therefore he's giving the girl away.
So you can say there is a different level of giving charity that we had.
Different levels of charity. Why you're looking at the charity? You know what I'm saying? Charity will be in, I forget where, I think probably also ninth chapter. You know what I'm saying? Why you're pulling charity out of this? You're talking about the combination of the boy and the girl. Why charity is the...
Because out of this four, like, it is given the order which is the best and not.
The best, but the charity wasn't the point. That's the commonality, is that the father's giving away the girl. That's the common point between the four. The difference is in the first one, the father made full arrangements. In the second one, he took advantage of a good opportunity. In the third one, then the boy comes and approaches. The father didn't make any arrangement. And then the fourth one, the girl made the arrangement. That's the point. It's not about the charity. That's the common point. You understand? Is you have to get. We're dealing with relationships here. You know, so it's what is there. So you're talking about the girl, right? The girl's going from her house to the boy's house. So therefore, it's a relationship between the daughter and her father. Like that, because that's where the strongest bond is. So that's what we're looking at. Does that make sense? Like that. Otherwise, then you throw it into a different category, and it's, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, we've made a nice subject, okay? A great one with nice thick gravy and everything like that. Now, if somehow or another, you know, it drops on the floor and something comes up that no one cleans it up, it's going to get hard and sticky, right? So now, would we look at the subjis, we bring out so many subjis, you know, like that, and you have, you know, some choices which one you want. Would you make the choice on, well, this one, if it fell on the floor and dried, this would be more sticky than this one. Or, hey, you know, we could use this and, you know, these, you know, and stick things together instead. Instead of all the synthetic glue, we could use this subject. You understand? What's the consideration when we're looking at the subject? It's taste, right? Right? So that's the point, is it should look nice, it should taste nice. Right? So you're talking about that aspect, not about how sticky it is. So you have to know the content. Not that it's not sticky, so the same thing is not that the charity aspect's not there, but that's only being brought out in connection with Brahmins, but we're discussing all orders here. So the point is the approval of the father or not. Right? And the Rakshasa, it's not necessarily approved because he's broke into the house, steals the girl. So it's not necessarily the Paisach, it's not approved by anybody because no one knows because nobody's there and the girl is, you know, somehow or another disoriented or asleep or something like that. Right? Gandharva, then the boy and girl know, but nobody else knows. Right? And the Asura, right? Then parents know, but then they're selling the daughter. You know what I'm saying? So there's no question. So in here, the element of the father, he is taking care of the daughter. And now he's turning over that care to the boy. That's that aspect of the charity. Right? Because the point is the husband wants to take care of a wife, right? But the problem is all potential wives are all daughters of a father. Right? Does that make sense? So that means, how do you take care? Because there's no independent women. Right? So that means then they have to go from the father's care to the son's care. So he likes taking care as a father, and he wants to take care as a husband. So that means you have to turn over that position. Does that make sense? This is what's going on. Therefore, that element of charity.
In India, mostly we hear like Kanyadan is a very big dan, so that is why
Kanyadan
they are talking much. So that,
Kanyadan.
Yeah, so dan they are saying. So that is why I thought maybe there is much like charity. Is there any very important point or something on charity?
But have you been at an Indian wedding?
Yeah.
When do they stop talking? Right, you go to an Indian wedding, right? Everybody there has been at least a 50 weddings, no? Okay, and you have the priest there sitting there mumbling away, and the boy and the girl are there. Parents are kind of close by, like that, you know, and that little thing with the grass, you know, with the flowers and all that sitting there. And then everybody else is sitting around talking. At what points do they stop talking? Think about it. Right? And if they're South Indian, when they put the Mangala Sutra, everybody goes, oh, hey, Mangala Sutra, turns around, looks, and ooh, yeah, this and that, like that. Or no, or if it's a North Indian, when they put the sindoor, you know, or when they go up the fire, she pours the ludge in the fire, you know, when they walk around seven times, generally everyone pays attention for that, but then they're pointing out, oh, she looks this or that, or look at that, you know, and there's so many things like that, right? And when she first walks out, You know what I'm saying? Yes or no? Did I miss something? Okay, so even though you're saying Kanya Don and everything's Don and isn't Don, but does anybody care? No. So it's not about Kanya Don. It's about Kanya Don. Not Kanye Don. Oh, hey, money, wealth. It's not like that. You understand? So don't take words and just take them off somewhere because you can. You know what I'm saying? Think about what we're discussing here. These are laws of what's proper and what's not proper. What are they trying to do? Instill an attitude. Right? Does that make sense? That's the point. They're trying to establish an attitude, you know, the human attitude on how you deal with these things. So it's not a matter of semantics of words. You know what I'm saying? Like that, yeah. Okay. Women must be honored and adorned by their fathers, brothers, husbands, and brothers-in-law who desire their own welfare. Adorned. Oh, not adored. It's adorned. It's adorned. In other words, they have to give gifts and stuff. So they're going to be honored, so they deal nicely. And they give gifts, you know, these observable gifts that can be utilized and, you know, like that. It says, who desire their own welfare. Right? Where women are honored, there the gods are pleased. But where they are not honored, no sacred rite yields results. So the husband can be doing as much rites and this and that as he wants, but it won't give any material results. He's chanting Hare Krishna, and you get your spiritual result, but he'll get no material results from any of his activities. Right? He may say, oh, we're devotees, we don't care, but then why do you get married? If you're a devotee, don't care, don't get married. You're getting married because you care. You know what I'm saying? So here's, no sacred right yields results. There'll be no material benefit from any of their endeavors if they don't take care of their women nicely. Where the male-female relations live in grief, the family soon wholly perishes. But that family where they are not unhappy ever prospers. Right? Notice the choice of words here. Where they are not unhappy. It's whether you can make a woman happy that is, according to Pingala in the 12th canto, it's never happened in history. Like that. She makes the point that no man has ever satisfied a woman. It's never happened. And it's not going to. But they can be where they're not unhappy. Does that make sense? So that's what you're endeavoring for. So does that make sense? Because otherwise you could go before, oh, well, they're honored and that, but what if they're not, you know, this and that and so many things. But that was what the opening was. Don't marry someone who doesn't have the proper qualifications. Because whoever you marry, then you have to take care of like this. It's not, oh, she's not qualified. No, but you shouldn't have married her. If you think she's not qualified, don't marry her, because whoever you marry, this is what your duty is. Does this make sense? You understand? So this is the fun part when devotees say that, you know, we're the Vedic and that and the man, and it's all about, you know, him and the control. On one level it is. It's his business to see it goes on, but this is what also is there. And these points are made very strongly. Right? Very strongly. And the next one's even more strong. Those houses on which female relations, not being duly honored, pronounce a curse, perish completely as if destroyed by magic. It means you look at the Kuru dynasty, most powerful dynasty on the planet, 100 qualified, powerful brothers, and in 18 days, they all disappeared. That whole family was finished. There was no heirs, nothing. All that's left is Dhritarashtra and Gandhara. That's like magic. You understand? Or Ravana, his whole kingdom, all his brother, everything, destroyed. Same principle. Right? The two greatest wars about... The other side was destroyed because of that. So now this is Shakuni's point. He's a gambler. right? He's not a big warrior. I mean, he is also, but I'm saying he's a gambler. So then using his skills as a gambler, right? How did he destroy Duryodhana? Right? Because that was his purpose.
Push him to gamble.
He pushed him to gamble, and then what happened in the gambling match?
That he dishonored Pushed
him to the edge.
Yeah, and dishonored Draupadi. Once that's done, actually Shakuni's work's over. Like that. Now he just has to ride along and just, you know, watch the fun. Yes.
I just understood that the women should be honored in their family, it's an extended family means, or it was more about the relationship between husband and wife?
The houses on which female relations not being duly honored.
Relatives also, because Draupadi and this is...
What's in the house?
If we take the modern thing, it's in their families, more or less. If we take the ancient ones...
Well, generally, I mean, nuclear would be on a good day. I think you'd have to say subatomic particle families.
It's still like a golden period.
Means we've heard of nuclear families.
Yeah.
Right? I know a few people.
So it's more broad?
Those who are dealing with the women, you know what I'm saying? If you're living in Milwaukee and they live in Philadelphia and you never see each other, then they don't come into this. Not for you. But in the house they're in, there's women in their house. So the house means who's in that house, who's dealing in that house. So if the relatives always come over, then they're in the house. If they never come over, they're not part of that. Right? In other words, don't invite anybody over who's not going to deal properly. Yeah. Does that make sense? So however the house is set up, if all the relatives all live together in one big family, you know, they got together some money, bought the local, you know, stadium and all that, and now they set up and everybody lives there, you know, and in the middle area the kids can play and, you know, like that, you know, put in a swimming pool or something, you know, then fine. But if they live, whoever interacts, whoever deals like that, you know, so it means, in other words, you don't have a problem for not dealing. It's how you deal. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, no one can complain that, you know, last week in Tucson, Arizona, that, you know, garbage was thrown on the sidewalk, that you weren't there. So it's nothing to do with you. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's whoever is there, whoever's involved. See, the point in this, these are rules of how human life works. So it's very important not to think, oh, these are rules, and so how do we bend them? How do we do this and that? That's absolutely not the point of this. Right? In other words, technically speaking, those who want to figure out how to bend the rules shouldn't be studying this at all. You know, this is how human life functions. So it's not a matter of how to get out of a rule, or it's a matter of knowing what the rules are so you know how to play properly. Is that
there was a marriage when the lady had already been married on a fire ceremony. So the people in charge said that they couldn't do another fire ceremony, so they did a Gandhava rite.
No, you can do. It's just you don't do all of it.
Okay.
Like that. You don't do all of it. Means the giving away of the girl, she can only be given away once. You can't give it away many, many times, you know, like that. You know, if you start up a racket or something like that. You know, something like that. So, but she can only be, so that whole part is not done. Right? But the lunge in the fire, the seven steps around, going around the fire, asmakramana and lajhoma, the and the saptapadigamana, those are done. But everything else is not done. So a remarriage is actually quite short. They're quite pleasant. Plus, they've been married before. It's not very exciting, so they want it to be quick also. So, you know, it works out good for all sides. In other words, the girl comes in, you know, or maybe by this time she's, you know, so it just, girl is reference meaning to the female member of the couple, right? Like that. And so she comes out dressed in everything, covered. She walks around the boy seven times. They exchange garlands, right? And then if it's already been a marriage, there's no konyudan, this, that, or any of that, then they just immediately go into the Lajj Homa and Asma Kramana. They don't do the thing of going up to the fire because you can't say as, you know, how you say, Soma gave you to Agni, oh no, Soma gave you to Gandharva, Gandharva to Agni, and now Agni to me. Because no, that was already someone else. You know what I'm saying? You know, so these things you can't do, right? The things are already some scars, the purification of the girl, they've already been done. So there's no need to do them again. Right? So that means then you're, so many of those rites, those aren't necessary to do again. Right? Does that make sense? You know, and then, you know, the uttar vivaha, you know, about, you know, pointing at the star and saying, you know, just like Vishishta and his wife, they're fixed and everything. No use saying that, because this is your second marriage. Right? You know what I'm saying? So there's just certain things you don't worry about. Those are, if you've done the full ceremony, then you only do those parts I mentioned. The girl coming out, the exchanging of garlands, the sin, putting on the sindur, like that, and then the, what do you call it? The stepping on the stone, the pouring of the lodge, going around the fire, and the seven steps, and then Vaishnava home, and you're done. Does that make sense? So that's what's done. So the panigrahana is not done again. Like, because neither the father can give away, and you know, it's just not done. Does that make sense? So yeah, it's not a matter of Gandharva, right? See, the thing is they're so intelligent, but they're not quite intelligent enough. You know, you can't do that again, but it's only you can't do part of it again. But then how do they know about the Gandharva, right? You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit, how you say, anadika krita kritam. Too much and too little. I told that story before. You know what I'm saying? It's more than was necessary, but not enough. You know what I'm saying? Oh, because in the right says restrictions, so it's more than should have been said, because they don't actually know, and it's not enough, because if they're saying that, then they should have known that, okay, you only do these parts. Does that make sense?
If people are living together for some time and they, some years, and they decide to go to Vrindavan, what's the point?
What's the point? It's the purification, and you're actually then, you know, using the improved rite.
So it's good.
It's good, but the point is technically speaking, the full rite's only for girls who are, how you say, I guess the only word would be virgins, right? You know, if that's the only, that's the full rite is only for them. That's
maiden.
Their rite for
maiden.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so that's there. And if they're not, you know, if they've been living together for years, there's a good chance they're not. You know, unless they're Catholics and their mother's really big and packs a good punch. You know, but then still, then it's on the edge, it's borderline, right? You know, so. The point is that then it would just be like what I said, just those particular parts are done, or there's certain things that are good for purification, you could do those aspects. Like that. Purify the girl from difficulties with dealing with wealth, or with children, or with devotional service, so these things, those rites can be done. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Is it true that I heard that they circumambulate fire for 7 times so that they can be together for 7 lifetimes.
And what would you care about that one? We've heard so many things. I've also heard Amita Bachchan dyes his hair black. You know what I'm saying? I've also heard he doesn't play guitar, even though in the movie he has a guitar. You know what I'm saying? What's the point? In other words, this is not for just, I've heard. What's the point?
Point is, because this we are following Moore's law, and by doing this, samskaras, a person is getting purified so that he can go back on back to Godhead.
Right, so if they're going to be stuck for seven lifetimes, then wouldn't it be better to leave that part out?
Something like that.
Yeah. It's also said that when the man has sex with the woman, that the hard knot of material attachment is like tied in his heart. So wouldn't it be good to avoid that one also? So, therefore, if you remained a Naistika Brahmachari, you wouldn't have the problem of the seven lifetimes or about the material knot being tightened. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. If you're going to take these things, take them far enough. Otherwise, it's just, okay, we'll leave that out because that doesn't sound just like the Kama Stuti. Had one seen it, he still wanted to know, what am I going to do in the ceremony? And I've already, you know, put it together in a way and what was appropriate for the ceremony. You know, and then he went through and said, oh, this Kama Stuti, we can't do it, because he says, boy touches a girl's heart, says, you know, this is love, love comes from love, love goes to love and through the ocean of love, like this and that, and saying, this is all just mundane. And then I pointed out to him, no, this is Vedanta. Is that you have the boy and the girl, but they're not actually the source of love. The bodies aren't. It's that element of attraction and attachment is flowing from Krishna through them and going back to him. So it's supposed to be there, recognize that and use this in connection with Krishna. That's like direct, straight Vedanta. All these verses are they're such high philosophy. You know, we're talking second canto Bhagavatam here. You know, then it was, oh, okay. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that if it's like this, would you make more effort if you knew that you were going to have to live with the person for seven lifetimes, or if this lifetime and that's it? No comment. Okay. Let us say you're going to be sitting with somebody for 5 minutes. Okay? But you're going to be sitting in a room, you know, stuck there because the trains don't work and there's nothing else for 3 days. Are you going to be, if you're only 5 minutes, do you need to be nice?
Yes.
You need to be nice. So if it's for 3 days, do you need to be nice?
Yes.
Okay, but which do you need to be nicer? In other words, if it's a 5 minutes, if you're not so nice, it means we're not thinking. Right? If we're not so nice, it doesn't matter, and 5 minutes will go away. Right? But if it's longer, then you have to really commit to this. Right? So therefore, it's said that seven life, but that's on the material platform. Because the normal thing, if you're working just within the realm of piety, then it is. Because the point is if one's together for seven lifetimes, then they get pretty good at how to work together and make it work. You know what I'm saying? So it works nicely. Right, and you're looking at it now, so many years later. But you know, the young couple when they're just getting married, you know, why seven? It could be 10. It could be 100. You know what I'm saying? Because they're already talking forever. You know, right? You know, it's like that. That's what they use in the songs, right? Forever, right? They don't use something else. Yeah, you know, they don't say, you know, for 3 days, you know, like that. Like that. They don't say like that. That'd be a weird song, wouldn't it?
That was Yoko Ono's question to Srila Prabhupada, right? She asked if she could stay with John forever, and Prabhupada was very sharp and says, just like the time the straws would be together.
Yeah.
She was because angry with them.
Yeah, because they're talking soulmates and all this kind of thing. It's no, it's just, you know, souls don't mate, right? Bodies mate. You know what I'm saying? The connection is between the bodies. One has to understand a marriage rite, you're marrying two bodies, right? And they come along with, you know, our already standard issue subtle bodies, right? Does that make sense? The souls aren't getting married. The souls are agreeing because they have material attachments to work cooperatively together to engage their attachments in the Lord's service. That's what the souls are doing. You know what I'm saying? So that's why these kind of questions aren't really important. It's not that you're stuck to this. Like that. But that's why you're not doing it because that's a pious activity. You're doing that, that's just the ritual, the rite. Because it's the mood that goes with it. You know what I'm saying? Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, in other words, we see here is that there, all these different things are said, but then the point is that therefore is whatever women are brought into the family, then one has to take care. Right? Does that make sense? Do we see? So the Vedic is very, very specific on creating this balance. Right? So that element of the husband's authority or leadership is to see to the protection and sad and happiness of the women in the family, or at least the non-unhappy.
You know. All right, that's why the Western vision of the women failed to see the great, let's say, attention which is given to women by the church.
Yeah. No, they don't. Means this point, I can guarantee you, there's no, you know, card carrying, rah-rah, you know, pro-Vedic, you know, macho. How you say, God, that would know this, these three verses. Four verses. Well, actually, it starts up here. Listen. Yeah, it starts at 52. So this whole section, honor of women, it's not very long, but it's very direct. Right? So that's the point, is you have to know all the thing, then it's balanced. Otherwise, we just take the parts that we like. But it doesn't here say that the women are arranging it themselves. They're saying the men are arranging. So the men are still in control of it, but it has to be in control according to what the women are happy with. Right? You know what I'm saying? The guy's taking the girl out to dinner, but it doesn't mean that now he orders what she'll want to eat and how she drinks it, now drink this, now chew this, take two bites of that. No. It's that he takes her out to dinner. That's the environment. He's in control of that. Where is he? Now, within that, then she, whatever she likes. If she doesn't want him, you know, if he doesn't want her to order anything Chinese, don't take her to a Chinese restaurant. You understand? So the point is he's create, is the environment, the situation, because the situation is what's the masculine element here. Now, what will be done in that situation, that's up to what will be the pleasure of the woman. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, you're not putting yourself in any situations in which the choices that the women would choose would be a problem. Does that make sense? A problem mean outside of duty. You know, that it will be a problem for you, that's going to happen. Because it means you have to work. Right? You know, the problem is laziness. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
I've seen some very pious Indian couples, and this balance comes so nicely, and it's hard to figure ways, but now it's becoming more clear where they're pulling this from. You see the attention that the man gives to the lady. And
yeah, because otherwise the other guys say, whims, they're controlled by the women and all. No. You control women by being controlled by them. Right? The men who are independent from the women and don't allow them to control them have no control over women. Right? Because what happens? All those macho men are sitting together there, you know, drinking their tequila or whatever it is, and complaining, yeah, I don't know, this, that, I can never figure it out, this, that. So they have no idea. You understand? But the one who takes care of the women, he has full control over them. But in that association, it doesn't look like it. Right? The women like things to be very gross and obvious. Right? Or do they like it to be subtle? Yeah, so that's the whole point, is you're in control, but it doesn't look like it. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you're in control. They have no problem with that, but it doesn't look like you're in control. It looks like they're in control. Does that make sense? Within the family. But if it's outside the family, then it's obvious that the husband's in control. So the ones where it's obvious outside the family that the husband's not in control, the woman's in control, means within the family, they don't know what they're doing. Otherwise, why would the woman need to extend that need to gain that control outside the family if she already had it within the family? Does that make sense?
Dimes fall, right?
Huh?
The dimes. Three?
Yeah. Okay. The price is up. When I was a kid, it was the penny dropped. Right now it's the dimes. Okay, we're up. Things are improving. Right? Hence, men who seek their own welfare should always honor women on holidays and festivals with gifts of ornaments, clothes, and dainty food. Dainty means nice, you know, like that. In that family where, in other words, these are the things, it's because on special days and all that, then it's something special should be happening. So that's just the time and all these things. So if somebody wants to know, because it's like, when do you do this? Here it's already said. Holidays and festivals. And what do you get? Ornaments, clothes, and nice food. You can't go wrong, right? No? Yeah, so it works, right? In that family where the husband is pleased with his wife and the wife with her husband, happiness will assuredly be lasting. Okay? If the husband's pleased with his wife, she can be pleased with him. He's not pleased with her, while she'll be pleased with him. Right? Because if the husband leads, then he has to be pleased first. Right? So that's the whole point. If the husband leads, then whatever quality you expect to see in the wife, you have to have. He's satisfied, she'll be satisfied. He's pleased, she'll be pleased. Right? You know, this idea, well, she's never happy, she's never this, that, because you're not. But you have to take the step first. That's what masculine means. First step, woman responds.
Could that be a reason why many, let's say, modern therapies work on throwing the responsibility back to you?
They throw it back to you, but they don't know what to throw back to who. It kind of works because part of the responsibility is that. See, the women can try a little harder. It means there are techniques how the woman can deal with a man who doesn't act like a man. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's easy. How do the women survive with other women? If they want to survive with them, how do they survive, right? You just figure out who's in charge. And deal with them like that. If the woman thinks she's dealing with a woman, she'll deal differently than if she thinks she's dealing with a man. If she understands that her man acts like a woman, then you deal with him like a woman. And according to how close and far you want to keep them, then she deals. She knows that perfectly. She just says he's not supposed to because he looks like a man. Right? But if you deal like a woman, it'll just work. You know what I'm saying? But if in that process, the man is not trying to act like a man, then the woman will only do that for so long, right? It means you only push the car down the road so long, and if it doesn't start, you stop and just keep walking. You understand? So that's the problem with it. The women can use these things, throwing it back on themselves. They can do. But the point is, if the man's not also trying, it'll fail.
Okay. I meant for the men. The therapists try to throw back to the men that they need to take responsibility in the relationship.
Yeah, of course.
In that sense.
Yeah, in that sense, it's correct. Okay. For if the wife is not radiant with beauty, she will not attract a husband. And if she has no attractions for him, no children will be born. If the wife is radiant with beauty, the whole house is bright. But if she is destitute of beauty, all will appear dismal. Right? So how pleasant and nice is the house is dependent on what mood the woman is in. She's happy, the house is happy. She's not happy, the house is not happy. It's just the way it is. So if you want your house to be happy, then you have to be happy with your wife. Yajnavalkya states, the moon has conferred on women purity. The Gandharvas have given sweet speech. And fire has bestowed the most exalted state of holiness. Therefore, women are most holy. Right. So that's what it says, is that Soma has given you to Gandharva, Gandharva to Agni, and now Agni has given you to me. Right. That's the mantra when they walk up to the fire. So, moon has conferred purity, Gandharvas have given sweet speech, and fire has bestowed the most exalted state of holiness. Right. Because they're very religious. They like to do everything according to the rules. right? If you know, because it's right, they know it'll give the good benefit, like that. So if one's look at it like that way, one deals on that platform. Does that make sense? Because the point is spiritual means you're dealing with pious elements, engaging in Krishna's service. So here is pious elements. So even if one says, well, these aren't spiritual, but the point is what is spiritual here?
Consciousness, huh?
Yeah, the consciousness. So when the consciousness is dealing with something, it becomes spiritualized. That's what we have. So there's no such thing. So one shouldn't say, oh, that's just material. All you had to work with is material. You're getting married is material. You know, your lack of, how you say, responsibility, or that is material. They're saying, so the whole conversation, when you get into family life, you're discussing the mechanics of it. Someone can't pull out the, oh, well, we're devotees and we only care about spiritual life. I don't buy it. Nothing. Zero. Because the point is if that's the basis, they would never have gotten married in the first place. As I said, you're not marrying the souls, you're marrying the gross and subtle bodies. That's what you're marrying. Otherwise, why does it say, you have to marry a boy and girl of equal nature? All the souls are of equal nature, so you wouldn't have to distinguish at all. Right? So there's no, you wouldn't even have to have the rule. Because they're all equal. They're all 1/1000th the tip of the hair, right? That's not that, you know, well, this one's actually a little bit more, and this one's a little bit less, you know, so therefore we've got to marry. No. You know what I'm saying? So, when you're dealing with marriage and husband and wife families, you're dealing with the material energy. Now, if you're seeing that in connection with the Lord, it's spiritual eyes. You don't, it's just mundane. Now, you have the choice is what you're going to spiritualize. Are you going to use superior qualities? Because that's where Krishna manifests very nicely. You know, are you going to use that in Krishna's service? Because, you know, husband and wife yelling and screaming at each other, throwing things across the room and stuff like that. I remember one devotee was telling me, he was there and he was doing something and, you know, his wife was being grumpy and that he just ignored her. But she caught his attention when he was sitting there looking at the paper, or sitting there, and the radio went flying just past his head and smashed on the wall. Then he knew, she needs some attention. So then he kind of turned and, okay, you know, because if not, the next one will get closer. You know, it was not going to hit the wall. Right? So the point is that, okay, that, but how is that being used in Krishna's service? You know what I'm saying? So in other words, people say, well, it's all, you know, it's spiritual, it's all in for Krishna's service, only when they absolutely have no idea what they're doing. Right? But they don't want to be told what to do because their ego is far too great. Does that make sense? So that's the problem is when an unqualified person is proud, there's nothing to work with. Right? A qualified person is proud, but still through the qualifications you can get at the points, and then that ego will come down. You know, best is a qualified person is not proud. Then it's very easy. It's just they didn't have the experience. You know what I'm saying? But you're dealing with something to say, oh, it's spiritual, we're devotees, it doesn't matter how we use the knife. You know, I can put my hand there and cut across, I do anything, I want to throw it up, you know, the man on top of my neck. It doesn't matter, it's all Krishna. Like that, you know? It's just absurd. But somehow or another, that same absurdity, we apply it into family life. And somehow or another, it becomes the standard of behavior. Absolutely absurd. If we take it and put it and shift it from family life into anything else, you know, just like this, the reaction, we will laugh at it. It is so dumb. But we'll take the exact same formula and then shift it into family life, and oh, that's standard. That's the only way to do it. That's masculine. That's this. That's that. So many things. We're devoted. We don't care. We something. It's just the babblings of untrained, unqualified persons. That's all. Now, if someone has, you know, a serious thing, okay, you know, we're supposed to say that the woman has all these nice qualities, but I don't see the sweet speech, I don't see the purity, I don't see it. But the point is that's what the potential is there. You know what I'm saying? If I go over to a gold mine, you know, there's a mountain there, and they found some, you know, traces of gold there. And the father says to the son, here's a gold mine. Right? Does that mean now just the gold's going to come marching out of it on its own? And, you know, and not only does the gold come out, not the ore, gold comes out. And it comes out as ornaments. And not only that, it comes with salespersons and a showroom. All I have to do is sit there, and it sells itself. And then they come over to me and hand me all this money. Well, actually, they just show it to me before they put it into my bank. Is that how it works? No, the point is when you say purity, sweet speech, and exalted state, most exalted state of holiness, means that's what the potential. But unless you deal, you can't draw that out. And if you don't draw it out, the woman is not satisfied. She can't draw it out herself. If she can draw it out herself, that's called independent. Dependent means someone else has to help her draw it out. You know what I'm saying? The men, it doesn't say that the women have to draw it out. The man has to work on these qualities himself. But he has to deal with those in such a way that he draws out those qualities from the woman. Does that make sense? Right. So we're talking about something very serious here. So the devotee says that none of this has anything to do with us. It means this. It means whatever all the various kind of problems with women. I said if this was happening, there would be no problems. Does that make sense? Like that. So then you wouldn't have a problem. But, you know, it's always, you know, for the men, it's, oh, they're always this, they're always that, they're always unsatisfied. Why are they unsatisfied? Because you're not trying to satisfy. You think, oh, I do this, and now it's done. Oh, then another, I got to do that. No. But if it's always, you understand that that's a constant thing, then they can be constantly satisfied. But if it's like they got to be satisfied on their own without any input from you, that means you're asking them to be independent. So if you want a relationship with an independent person, go find a man and become a friend, you know. Go down to the, you know, motorcycle shop or the bar, you know, hang out, go fishing, you know, go shoot some bears or something, you know, like that, you know. You know what I'm saying? Do some man stuff, you know. But if you want to be with women, that means they're dependent. So that means that's not going to happen. What you're putting into it is what you're going to get out of it. You know, no good businessman thinks, I'll just sit back and the business will run on its own. The moment he steps back is the moment it fails. Every moment he's involved, every moment it's working. That's how it works. Everything's like that. You know what I'm saying? You're cooking something. What's the difference between, well, I mean, in this context, what's the difference between a good cook and a not good, and a not a very, you know, practiced cook.
A good cook is there always.
He's always there. Even if he steps away, what is he thinking about?
About the preparation.
Preparation. So he knows how long. Okay, he needs to go get something. He'll know how long he can be away. And even if he hasn't found what he wants, he'll go back and stir and do whatever he needs to do. But the person is not very experienced. He goes away and he forgets about it. And then he comes back and burns and this and that. And so that's the difference. Because the consciousness never leaves it. So the consciousness never leaves what is involved in the, you know what I'm saying? So that's what we're talking about. Well, here the men go away, they just are in their own world, and then they come back, oh, this, and I forgot to call, and well, she said to get this and that, but I was busy, you know, so, you know, it's not going to work.
So, Mara, that also brings us to the other point, it's very difficult to be in the present. The challenge is to be in the present.
Present, yeah. So therefore you see the philosophy. Mm-hmm. So all this is saying, if you're in the present, you understand the nature of what you're dealing with. It's Krishna's potencies. And therefore he sets how the potencies work and their interaction. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. Because here is from the, just let's take this stuff, what we're here reading here. Now from the cultural side, if we have experience of this, okay, we can relate to it. But if we haven't, what's our approach to this?
It's theory.
It's theory, but how can that theory be alive? I just mentioned it.
By culture.
By culture, but no, but by understanding the philosophy. In other words, what is given here is practically applying the same philosophy you've been studying in the morning class. Right? It's all Krishna's potencies. It's his splendor, right? So here, purity is Krishna's quality. Sweet speech is his quality. He says of all, you know, the women's, six women's qualities, so sweet speech is one of them. The exalted state of holiness. That's all Krishna. So that's what's there. So if you're dealing with Krishna as that, then why won't he respond? If you just think, oh, woman and whatever I want, then that's going to happen. Then, you know, is that how you deal with Krishna? The qualities of Krishna, it's not going to work. So even if you can't, by culture, wouldn't have a clue about this because you've never seen it in your life, you know, then you can still do it from the philosophical point. And then by that practice, you'll see the two. Right? So therefore, then philosophy has culture, culture has philosophy. Because when we say culture, we mean religion. Because it means that's the way women are, that's the way men are. It means you can't change that. You can't say, well, women shouldn't be like that. No, that's not going to work. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't work like that. Okay. So, as I promised, things would lighten up as we moved along. What about tomorrow?
What's tomorrow?
In the evening, I don't know. Did anyone figure out what's the program?
Yeah,
you know the schedule. It's written. Isn't that what Ramsey said? It was a good point. You know, just
the class is 6:15 in the morning.
Class is 6:15.
Then Dashna.
7
followed by 8. So the question is do we run either of the morning? I mean, the second class definitely we wouldn't run, but we wouldn't. The second one. But the question is, this evening one, I would expect we could run.
Yeah.
But the question is do we run the first one, the 7 o'clock one? It means we can run if devotees will come, but if devotees are going to be busy there, then we can not run. I have no idea. Yeah. Because I was actually surprised in the morning when I asked it and no one knew anything. Then it struck me, it says, wow, I don't think anyone's here as Jayapataka Maharshi's disciple. You know, and then I was thinking, oh, okay. I mean, that's new for me. I'm not used to it. Because in Mayapur, it meant everybody was Jayapataka Maharshi's disciple. Or they were Bhavananda. So you had one or the other. You didn't have. So how many would come if we had the 7 o'clock program? Okay. How many would not be coming?
I'll go for the same one.
Yeah, okay. So then why don't we just have the evening class then? Yeah. We'll continue with more. The next point is degradation of the family. Something that would be, you know, how you say, close to our purva karma. Right?
Oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaurapreme.